Well, good evening. The passage that we're working with the children is actually taken from Exodus chapter 16. I'm just going to read you the first few verses from that. It says, "The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, 'If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death.'" If the Israelites in the desert were good at one thing, it was complaining. We see other complaints in Exodus 15, verse 24. They're talking to Moses and they're saying, "Look, this is a desert. We've got no water. We are just going to die." And then God produced water for them. There's the passage here where they complain about having nothing to eat. And God provided the quail and manna. And as we've said, with the children, the manna was produced for them all the time they were in the desert, 40 years or so. They got to such a state, and we see that in Numbers 14. They received the report of what situation was in the land that they were going into, and they said, "If we go into that land, we'll get killed. They're like giants. They're going to slay us. They're going to kill us. Why on earth are you going to take us there? We'll die." And this is the sort of, after many complaints of various kinds, and it's not often God gets to the end of his tether, but we read in Numbers 14 that it got to the state where God said to Moses, "Step to one side, I'm going to wipe them all out, and I'll make a new nation out of you." And Moses said, "No, don't do it. You know, work with them." Here they are in the desert, they complain about not having food. And the comment that they make is virtually, well, it's unbelievable. In verse 3, the Israelites said, "If only we had died." All right? In other words, they're saying, "It's so bad here, we wish we were dead." That's, you know, about as bad as it gets, I guess. But we see a couple of things. First of all, they were only looking at a partial picture. They were saying, "We were better off in Egypt." Funny, not sort of directed in any way, but Dave and Julie were talking about this exact thing before we started tonight's meeting. And to say they were looking with rose-tinted spectacles about their time in Egypt is one vast understatement. I mean, they said, "In Egypt, we had pots of meat. We ate all the food we wanted." It makes it sound like this is some sort of brilliant sort of eat all you can buffet. They were just there, and the Egyptians were just turning up with waiter service and bringing them absolutely everything they needed. Except it wasn't quite like that, really. Because you see, in Exodus chapter 3, when God is speaking to Moses, what he says is, "I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt." Well, if you're there, eating everything you want, there's no problem with supply, everything's there, that doesn't sound like misery. No? So we've got some sort of difference here between what they were saying it was like and what it was actually like. And let's face it, that's like us. We can look with rose-tinted spectacles about how it used to be or how it could have been or what should have been or whatever. And we're only looking about a very small part of the whole picture. You know, even if it was a case of they did have these full pots of meat they could eat. I mean, there's the list that Julie was talking about all the things they could have. They had cucumber, they had fish, they had greens, they had vegetables, they had this, that, and the other. Even if that was all true, they were still slaves. Even if it was completely true that they had absolutely anything they wanted to eat, they were still being forced to produce bricks for the building that Pharaoh said they'd got to do. They weren't being paid for it. They were slaves. And they were being made to produce with, well, we see the account about when Moses went to talk to them. Pharaoh, instead of releasing some, said, double the quota. They've got to produce twice as much. And don't even give them the stuff that they need to produce it. They've got to go out and find it themselves. So even if they had everything to eat, as God said, they were still at the state where they were living in misery. Because they were slaves. So how they could just forget all that? Or are we like that as well? Can we so easily skip over the bad? Can we so easily sort of not mention the things that weren't very suitable? God had done so much for them. He demonstrated his power on their behalf. He'd freed them. He'd given them wealth. Just listen to this. In Exodus chapter 12, verses 33 to 36. It says, the Egyptians urged the people to hurry and to leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we'll all die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders, kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. And it says, the Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver, gold, and for clothing. The Lord made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them everything that they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. And you know, later on, when there's an offering for building the temple, the amount of stuff that the people brought, because they'd had so much. I mean, it says there they got gold, silver, clothing. They were wealthy people when they left Egypt. Well, that was because of God. That didn't actually get mentioned in the passage about, oh, I wish we were back in Egypt. He'd rescued them through the Red Sea. It saved them from the pursuing army that was going to sort them out and bring them back into slavery. God had brought them to this place and they didn't see any of it. All they saw was, we want food, we haven't got it now, it was so much better then. They didn't have the full picture. They didn't have the correct perspective. So much like us. There's many times when we don't like what's happening now. There's many times when we don't like where we're at. There's many times perhaps when our plans aren't working out like we thought they ought to. And we can say it was better when it was better at such and such a point. It could be better if we had this and we had that and the other. Or maybe we see other people who seem to have a much nicer time of things. We've seen people who we think are doing much better than we are. Really? Can we so easily be fooled? Can we so easily get the wrong idea? Can we so easily get that partial picture that doesn't show the full story? You know, a little while ago, we were in the supermarket and we were waiting to be served, and there was a couple in front of us. And to be honest, they looked financially not to be doing too well. They weren't dressed particularly well. The stuff that they bought, it was sort of fairly meagre. And I was feeling sorry for them. And we followed them out into the car park, and I'm sort of wondering, I wonder what sort of car they're going to get into. Blow me down, it was a next to new Mercedes. I don't know an awful lot about Mercedes, but it looked pretty swish to me. But I hadn't seen the full picture. When I'd seen them back in there, I'm thinking, oh, they can't be very well off. I got out in the car park, different story. But how often do we only get a partial picture and we form an idea? We say, oh, it must be like this, but we don't see the full story. Psalm 73 in the Message version. Listen to this. No doubt about it, God is good. Good to good people. Good to the good-hearted. But I had nearly missed it. I missed seeing his goodness. I was looking the other way, looking up to people at the top, envying the wicked who have it made, who have nothing to worry about, not a care in the whole wide world. Pretentious with arrogance. They wear the latest fashions in violence, they're pampered and overfed, decked out in silk bows and silliness. They jeer using words to kill. They bully their way with words. They're full of hot air, loud mouths, disturbing the peace. People actually listen to them. Can you believe it? They're like thirsty puppies and they lap up their words. What's going on here? He's got out to lunch. Nobody's tending the store. The wicked get by with everything. They have it made. Piling up riches, and I've been stupid to play by the rules. Where has it gotten me? A long run of bad luck, that's what. A slap in the face every time I walk out the door. If I had given in and talked like this, I would have betrayed you. Still, when I tried to figure it out, all I got was a splitting headache until I entered the sanctuary of God, and then I saw the whole picture. And it's very possible to get disheartened, depressed, because we don't see the full picture. We get absorbed with the partial now that we see at that particular point. And we miss the reality of the situation. But even if this image that we form in our mind is actually true, that somebody is doing really well, that somebody is doing so much better than us and they're not sort of sticking to the rules, they're getting by with everything and they're not having anything like the trouble we are. You know, we might see all the aspects. We might actually take everything into account. And it's quite possible that it could be better for us. We really may well be hard done to. Compared to others, we could well be having a very hard time. Perhaps we're having it rough when somebody else, when we see everything, they're having it smooth. Our way, hard, difficult. Their way, no heartache, no hardship, no difficulties at all, no pain. Is that the best way? Is it best to have no pain? Is it best to have no difficulty? The fact of the matter is that a butterfly, when it's trapped in its chrysalis, has to fight its way out. It has to struggle to burst through that, because in doing that, it actually strengthens its wings to the point where it can fly. If you release the butterfly from its chrysalis, then it won't go through the difficulty and it won't be able to fly. So sometimes pain can be good. Athletes go through a pain barrier to be the best. Anybody, and it's certainly not me, who has ever run a marathon, 26 and odd miles, they say that at about 23 miles, you hit what's called the wall. And at that point, what's happened is the energy that you got stored up is depleted, and you then start to eat into your own body fat. But it'd be so easy to give up at 23 miles. But if you push through the barrier, if you push through the pain, you actually can finish, because you have the reserves, you have the energy, you have the ability to complete. Jesus went through pain, heartache, and death. But it says that for the joy that was set before him, not the joy of enduring the pain, not the joy of enduring the heartache, not the joy of enduring the death, but the joy of seeing people brought into the Father's family. God doesn't delight in our agony, but sometimes our agony is necessary to perfect us. And the fact of the matter is that if we are in God's will, then whatever we go through is for the best, although we may not like it at the time. The old story of the child being punished and the punisher saying, "This is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you," at the time, you don't believe that. But eventually, you see the other side of it. And sometimes the things we go through actually make us better. If we don't take it the right way, though, it can make us bitter. But God is at work in us, and we need faith to trust him, to say that what is happening, what we're going through, is actually for the best. And that's what faith is, because we trust him to take us the best way. We trust him to work out his plans in our life. Paul said this in Philippians chapter 4, verse 12. "I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learnt the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed and hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength." And then writing to Timothy, Paul says this: "Godliness with contentment is great gain." Because what we're doing there is we're trusting God to be the one who knows the best, and we put our lives in his hand, and we're saying that whatever's happening, wherever we are, wherever we're going, he knows it, he's chosen it, and it's the best thing for us. The last part of Psalm 73 says this, verses 21 to 27. "When I was beleaguered and bitter, totally consumed by envy, I was totally ignorant. I was like a dumb ox in your presence. I'm still in your presence, but you have taken my hand. You wisely and tenderly lead me, and then you bless me. You're all I want in heaven. You're all I want on earth. When my skin sags and my bones get brittle, God is rock firm and faithful. Look, those who left you are falling apart. They'll never be heard from again. But I'm in the very presence of God. Oh, how refreshing it is. I've made Lord God my home. God, I'm telling the world what you do." So when we look, do we see partial pictures? When we look, do we see the full story? When we look, do we say, "God, my life is in your hands, and I'm following your plans. No matter where they take me, no matter where I go, I know I can trust you for it to be the best." As we've often quoted from the Wren Collective song, "What's true in the dark is true in the light." Both. If truth is truth, then that's it. And the truth is that God knows us. If it's true in broad daylight, in the midst of the darkness, in the darkest midnight, God is still with us, still working for us. So we will trust him in faith, or will we be like the Israelites and get a gold star at complaining?